Nationwide Insurance versus Central Laborers, 12-1784. Mr. O'Hara.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Patrick O'Hara. I represent the Central Laborers Pension Fund, Central Laborers Welfare Fund, and the Central Laborers Annuity Fund, which I will refer to as the funds. This case comes before you on a diversity jurisdiction. It emanates from a declaratory judgment action filed by Nationwide Insurance Company seeking to have a declaration that an exclusion or a number of exclusions apply to their insurance policy that dictate, according to Nationwide, that they do not have to defend their insured defendant Gene Hentz in an action filed by the funds in the Morgan County, Illinois Circuit Court with regard to the theft of a CD-ROM in an automobile that belonged to Ms. Hentz. I'd like to, in the first instance, underscore the posture of this case for the court in terms of the burden here. Inasmuch as this is a matter that is before the court on a de novo review, and inasmuch as Illinois law, of course, applies here, inasmuch as Illinois law provides that it is the burden of the insurer to affirmatively prove that an exclusion in an insurance policy applies, then it's the continues to be the burden here of Nationwide Insurance to show that their exclusion applies. With regard to the specific exclusion that the district court found applied is the in the care of provision or exclusion. And Illinois law provides, under those circumstances, a two-part test. Now, the district court didn't state this two-part test, but Illinois provides that for the in the care of exclusion to apply, the property has to be within the exclusive possessory control of the insured at the time of the loss. And two, the property has to be a necessary element of the work performed by the insurer.
Can I ask you about that, Mr. O'Hara? I think you're referring to the Essex case. Is that right?
Yes.
And
Kayson.
Maybe you can help me on this. In Essex, we're dealing with that. It's that second prong that seems kind of jarring until we realize that in Essex it was a business CGL policy. And you're going after a homeowner's policy here where that element would seem very odd.
Well, I think, again, the whole idea of in the care of emanates, I believe, for insurance companies not to warrant work as it applied. And I think that's the case here.
With a homeowner's?
Pardon me?
With a homeowner's policy?
In terms of in care of exclusion, I believe. And I think it still is applicable here because there isn't any case law that indicates that those two prongs don't apply to a homeowner's policy. They indicate that it's both, as I say, in Essex and Kayson, that the in care of exclusion must meet both prongs. Now, I don't think it's necessary. I don't think the Nationwide can show affirmatively and meet the burden on either of those prongs, however, particularly with regard to the exclusive possessory control factor. The other unusual thing about Illinois law we have to remember here is that the determination of whether the insurance company has a duty to defend has to be based solely on the four corners of the complaint, and that no extrinsic evidence is acceptable with regard to that determination. Here, for example, in the complaint does not say that Ms. Hentz was authorized to take this CD-ROM outside of the office. The allegations of the complaint, as even Nationwide points out, indicates that there are no allegations that any other person had access to the CD-ROM, let alone Hentz's automobile. But that's pretty much the point, is that the complaint doesn't say. The complaint doesn't say that she had exclusive possessory control over the CD-ROM or the automobile at any time. And that's the other peculiar foot of the Illinois law, is that it's merely the potentiality of coverage that triggers the duty to defend. There isn't any requirement that the complaint affirmatively states a proposition for coverage. It is the proposition is that if there is any potential coverage at all within the context of the complaint, then the duty to defend is triggered. And as the Illinois courts have provided, the degree of scrutiny with regard to that process is minimal in terms of triggering that duty to defend. And as I said, when Nationwide points to two cases that they indicate distinguish the Bolinowski case, and I've cited the Bolinowski case because that's the case where you had an owner of a building and you had musicians were keeping their instruments on the property, and the insurance company attempted to avoid a duty to defend and an indemnification by indicating that the musical instruments were in the care of the building owner. And the court indicated in Bolinowski, well, that's not the case because there wasn't any indication, as they said, that the complaint did not reveal whether the defendant owners of the premises were granted or exercised the right of access to the equipment in order to maintain, move, or protect the equipment. We have a similar situation here as well, is because the complaint doesn't state that Ms. Hentz had the authority to move the CD-ROM outside of the office at any time. And so there's no indication that she had was granted or exercised the right of to move or maintain or protect that particular CD-ROM at the situs.
Is your theory that she stole it from your clients?
No, not from my clients. It's a question of how it ended up in her car parked outside her residence.
Was there any effort to recover from the accounting firm or its insurance policy on this loss?
Yes.
And what was the result of that?
Well, there was a particular – well, actually, there's two clauses in that regard. There's two policies in that regard, one of which had a limitation, a small limitation, for this particular type of loss, and that was recovered. And then there is a similar case pending with similar language that is now pending before the District Court in Southern Illinois as well, awaiting a decision in this case.
Was there some sort of a deductible there that you're after?
Pardon me?
Was there, and the business insurance, whatever it is Judge Hamilton just asked about, was there some gap that they didn't cover?
Oh, yeah. So there was a very, very small coverage for this type of loss.
How much?
Pardon me?
How much?
$5,000. Okay. And so we don't believe that the exclusion applies. I would note the court did find that this particular policy did cover this type of damage because of the language, the particular language of the policy involved.
What about the business exclusion?
Pardon me?
What about the business exclusion?
The business exclusion, I don't believe, applies because the courts have focused on what the activity was at the time of the loss and whether it was in pursuit of the business. And so the courts have ruled that they look at whether the property was merely the object of the business or whether it was in a situs and at a time where the business was being pursued. And under these circumstances, particularly from the four corners of the complaint, I don't believe that it can be inferred that Ms. Hentz was in any way pursuing the business of the CPA firm with a CD-ROM in a portable laptop parked in a car outside a residence. And so it's that instance where the this is fits right into the notion that this was merely an object of the business as opposed to any conduct that was in pursuit of that business.
Thank you, Mr. O'Hara.
Thank you.
Mr. Bosquet?
Biscay. Very close.
Say it again.
Biscay.
Biscay. All right.
Thank you. I place the court. I just wanted to address a couple of the issues that, my opponent just brought up. First of all, with respect to the sort of two-prong test set up under Illinois case law, that's something that unfortunately we kind of took, you know, from the appellant's brief and took it as true until we got his reply brief, where he really focused on the two-factor test, and we looked a little deeper, and it didn't seem to fit in because every single case.
Wait a minute. Are you saying you didn't check what he had said in his original brief?
No, we did. The way it reads, it seems that it's applicable in all care, custody, and control cases until you look more closely and realize that all of those cases are in fact CGL. Or business liability policies. Not a single one of them was a homeowner's policy. So I apologize that we weren't able to pick that up in our original brief. I don't think it matters in this particular case because, you know, the second prong doesn't really apply because it's not a work-type case. But if you do apply the first prong, which is exclusive possessory control, that's exactly what Ms. Hintz had. In fact, that's exactly what the complaint said that she had, the complaint in the underlying action. It's not a case just about who had access. This is a case about whose care was this property in. And the petition, complaint in the underlying case, if you look at paragraphs 5, 6, and 7, it makes clear that she was retained to not only do accounting work, but to safeguard the confidential and protected information provided by the plaintiffs. That was a condition of her employment, and she agreed that she had to safeguard the confidential and protected information by plaintiffs. And then it also goes on to state in paragraph 7 that as an employee of the firm, she came into possession of the CD-ROM and had a duty to plaintiffs to exercise reasonable care in safeguarding and protecting the CD-ROM. That's something that she never relinquished. She had that duty to protect the CD-ROM the entire time she had it. The complaint goes on to say that she took it into her car and left it, I guess, in a laptop in her car. And while I can envision some scenario where somebody else might have access because she didn't do a very good job of safeguarding it, she still had control over it, and she still had that duty to safeguard the CD-ROM. The fact that she failed at doing that, you know, is not something that relates to coverage so much as liability in the underlying case. I'd point out that the distinction between an exclusion like that and a CGL policy and an exclusion like that and a homeowner's policy serves sort of different purposes. The exclusion like that, the care, custody, and control exclusion, in addition to having different language in a CGL policy, it's part of that type of coverages, what are called business risk exclusions, where basically insurance companies are attempting to not warrant the work of the entity that they're insuring. In a homeowner's policy, the purpose of that particular exclusion comes right after, you know, the exclusion for property that you own. And the idea is that it's not a property policy, it's a liability policy. They don't want to change the liability portion of their policy into a first-party property policy. So just from a sort of general standpoint, there's a distinction between that type of exclusion in a homeowner's policy and in a CGL policy. And Illinois courts employing Illinois law are charged with using the plain language of the words of the policy. And our position is that you don't need to go beyond that to deny coverage for this one or to uphold the district court's decision. because it very broadly, the exclusion very broadly applies to property damage, to property rented to, occupied, or used by, or in the care of the insured. And in this case, the property was in Ms. Hint's care and her sole control. She had a duty to care for the for the CD-ROMs. A little bit about the business exclusion. The business exclusion is also pretty broad. It relates to bodily injury or property damage arising out of or in connection with a business engaged in by an insured. Well, that's pretty broad to start with. There are some cases that seem to limit it, and if you're going in sort of a personal errand with when you have an accident, there's a case that was cited by my opponent, this Vermakovic, where the limo driver was driving a limo for personal errands when he struck a pedestrian, another one with a boat where they were taking the boat to get repairs, but it wasn't directly related to the business of the insured in those cases. In our case, the business of the insured was to protect the information on those CDs. I mean, another job duty was to do the accounting work, but that doesn't diminish the fact that part of her job duties, her explicit job duties as set forth in the underlying complaint, were to safeguard and take reasonable care of the CDs. The fact that she didn't is why the lawsuit was filed, but it's, it has nothing to do with whether or not there's coverage. We also have an argument about the property damage issue. The district court ruled against us on that. We disagree. We think that this is not damage because of property damage. It's damage because of the loss of intangible property. There's case law that says that computer information is not real property. It's not tangible property. It's intangible property. The district court tried to make the distinction, saying that the sort of the but for the loss of the CDs, there wouldn't have been this subsequent damage, and there was in fact the loss of use of the physical CDs. But they've not sued to get, you know, the CDs back. There's no claim for the price of the CDs or the loss of use of the CDs. The claim is for the loss, the breach of that confidential information. So, you know, we still believe that there's a strong argument that there simply was no property damage to trigger coverage. So if there's no questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce Kay. Mr. O'Hare, how much? All right, thank you. We'll take the case under advisement, and I'll call the fifth case.